Let's get ready to make the magic happen.
Make it happen, baby.
Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 74, our second podcast of the week, actually, since we were unable to do one for you last week. I'm your host, Greg Biederman, editor-in-chief of PC Gamer Magazine, and I am joined today by our associate editor, Dan Stapleton, who is no longer reporting from inside a fishbowl.
I've escaped.
Executive editor, Kristen Salvatore.
Who's looking at a fishbowl right now.
True. Norm the intern.
I have no fish jokes.
And our podcast producer, Mr. I need you guys to stick to a damn schedule, Jeremy Williams.
What's up, people?
Surprisingly, there's, since we podcasted just a couple days ago, there's lots of good stuff new to discuss. First thing is, last show, we were talking about whether or not Gregory was truly a Russian name.
Getting right to the important stuff, huh, Greg?
Just right to the important stuff. Or, I would argue, getting the not-so-important stuff out of the way. There was some debate last time about whether or not Gregory was truly a Russian name. My girlfriend's family, which is Russian, rather than calling me Gregory, calls me Grisha, which they said was Russian for Gregory.
Call you that?
Yeah, they call me Grisha. Grisha!
That's adorable.
It's a little intimidating, actually, when her dad calls me that. But
it actually means you're not good enough for my daughter.
Probably, yeah. Stop looking at her that way.
That's what it means.
That's the actual translation. But
I can kill you in your sleep.
Yeah. It turns out that I guess that Grisha is sort of like a nickname for Gregory, that Grigori, G-R-I-G-O-R-I, or some rough equivalent, is actually the real Gregory. It does exist. And
Grigori?
Grigori.
Like in Half-Life 2? Father Grigori?
Yeah, that's
there you
very
go.
True.
There's the game connection. Yes.
So settled. So I just want to thank everybody very quickly. Thank you all for writing in and setting me straight. I'm going to have a discussion with my girlfriend and her parents later this very evening.
Good. You educate them on Russian. That's great.
Yeah. I'm going to let
They'll
them
love
know.
That.
Hey, you know what? My great-grandparents were from Russia. Like, I totally know what I'm talking about. Moving on to something far more important, I just wanted to touch very briefly on this because it just happened and it hurts me. Our intern, Norm, just got a $50,000 car, and all I need to say about it is that I hate you, and I hate you, and I want you to
Whoa.
Die. And I'm not paying you anything anymore. You should clearly start paying me.
Were we paying him?
Clearly,
we were paying him in the first place.
Yeah, so...
You're the one who signed off the expense forms.
We're paying, we're paying you in, like, Cheez-Its and, you know... Video cards.
You guys have always said that you'd be working for Norm in the very short term, so this is just one more step in that direction.
Yep. Didn't think it would be that short term. But yeah, congratulations, Norm, you bastard. In game-related news, this is pretty neat. For those of you out there who have not had a chance to see Spore or hear about Spore, like literally with audio, Will Wright just gave a talk at South by Southwest, which is a popular music and media conference held in Austin, Texas each year, and there's a 17-minute video up at totalspore.com where he's talking about the game and showing it off. It's largely stuff that we at PC Gamer saw at last year's E3, and you've probably read about in the magazine, but it's really cool to see it in action and to hear Will Wright talking about the game because he's got such passion and he's such a smart guy.
I love him so much.
Yeah, and Kristen totally has a
He's
crush on him.
He's oozing with the smartness.
Yeah. He is really, what was new about this movie he touched on some of this stuff at E3, but not to such a large extent, was just sort of like the philosophy behind Spore. How, you know, you can do things in the game like, heat the planet up using greenhouse gases, which, you know, in a very short time causes the oceans to rise and the plants to wither.
And your planet to melt.
And your planet to basically melt down. But you can see, you know, in 5 or 10 minute snippets, these the long-term implications of what happens, you know, here on our planet. And so his idea here is that if you give people, you know, basically a toy that allows them to accelerate these sort of long-term events, so that something that they can absorb in a short period of time, that they'll learn from it, and that they'll realize how you know, big a problem we've got here, you know, on our world.
There was a New York Times article, I don't know, 6 or 7 months ago, about Will and about Spore. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was mentioned in it was the idea that the writer really felt that, for example, his fourth grader's class could do a whole lot worse than to spend the year really playing Spore. That it's, you know, that there are lots of, there are so many sort of miniaturized, I should say, lessons that can be extrapolated from the game, that in fact it's a great way to teach all sorts of other things. So I'm psyched that they're at least starting to touch briefly on that.
On the other hand, what kind of endorsement?
Education tool. Sorry?
What kind of endorsement is they could do worse?
Okay, what do you want? You know?
It was also really cool to see him flying around in a ship that looked like the Enterprise and then shooting down obelisks from 2001 to boost the intelligence of the creatures.
And obviously he's not gonna. They're not gonna put chips in there that look like Star Trek. They just give
you
the
tools.
But
you could design it.
No, but
they're
They've definitely made. That was one of the things actually we covered in our top games of 2007 feature when we talked about the vehicle editor. Is that they're making, you know, just like you said. Obviously they can't let you create the exact Millennium Falcon, for example. But one of the things they've discovered is that people really want to be able to do that. So they're spending lots of time making sure that all of the parts are available. That if you wanted to recreate one of those chips, you could.
Of course, didn't Marvel sue City of Heroes over the same exact thing?
This is a little different, though, because if you've actually used the tool, I don't know if you had a chance to try it at E3, like the parts in Spore actually sort of like morph into each other.
Right.
So even if you didn't have a specific shape that was sort of like, you know, maybe the cockpit in the Millennium Falcon, let's just say, you can sort of, you know, you can pull and tug at shapes and push them into other building blocks. And there's, I can't, I mean, unless they sort of limited your ability to customize, it would almost be impossible not to be able to make
it. Yeah, it would be like
I'm not saying that the Marvel's lawsuit against Cryptic was a good thing. I think they're crazy. They may as well sue people. They may as well sue Crayola for letting people draw Wolverine with crayons. But I hope Marvel doesn't go on another one of their crazy sue sprees.
Or Star Trek. I guess.
Because I plan to make the Wolverine space station.
Right.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was really interesting that was an issue that people were gravitating toward making, like, quote-unquote real-world things in Spore. That wasn't my experience at all. Like, my experience was to go as far off the deep end the other
direction.
I think
there'll be a phase. People
want
to create things that are familiar. I mean, an interesting quote that came out of the presentation was that he called the game Maya for 10-year-olds.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, just that concept. Plus, he wants to see Care Bears versus Klingons.
Right. Which is what, I mean, you basically have the tools to create any kind of creatures you want. The one thing, though, is, Jeremy, you were talking about this a little bit before the show, is that Spore definitely seems to have, like, a cartoony look.
Yeah.
And I've seen some, we've seen, a lot of little models of, like, creatures that that people have made in Spore. And some of them are kind of gnarly looking, but they all do look very cartoony. I'm wondering
what's wrong with cartoony?
Mine's a vicious killer.
A vicious killer, but still kind of...
Even with the curved edges, and whenever you have those rounded corners.
Mine has tusks and a big, scary...
But it still looks like something like out of like a Beetlejuice cartoon.
Or Monsters, Inc.
See why that's a bad thing.
Oh, I don't think it's a bad thing either, but I would also like some additional realism. It would be cool to be able to get in there and, like, you know, make something that actually just looks violent. And you can
looks violent. Thank you very much, DJ.
It looks violent. It doesn't look pissed off. It looks like I've got razor blades.
Check out the eyes on that guy. We should add that we're referring to. I was lucky enough at E3 last year to get one of the little to get my Spore creature printed on their crazy 3D printer. So I actually have a little model of my Spore creature.
Oh,
he's pretty scary looking.
I don't know. I see that guy and I want to cuddle with him.
He's got tusks. He's got an angry look on his face, and he's got a. What would you call that on his tail?
Walruses have tusks, and they make stuffed animals out of them.
Greg wants to cuddle with a walrus.
Wait, Kristen.
Have you never seen a walrus stuffed animal?
That's fascinating. Do you think in the future, when after Spore comes out, that'll be an option for people to print out their models?
One of the things that actually is mentioned in the last, at the end, actually, of, what's the name of the book? The Long Tail, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the... Is that the Chris Anderson book?
Yeah, that is.
Yep.
I think it's at The Long Tail. Originally that was EA's plan. Was you were supposed to have the option to, once you'd created your creature, to send the information to EA, and for a certain amount of money they would create the essentially the action figure. It's not really an action figure,
like
it's not
they did for you.
Of your creature.
Yeah.
Yes. I think I don't know that that's still the case. I suspect that they've since figured out it's prohibitively difficult
expensive.
To kind of handle that.
Oh yeah, but people would
but
pay
they
a
were
fortune
gonna
for that.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, people were they were originally going to charge $20, and there you go. You've just if the game costs $50, like
so maybe something they do in the future if the technology comes.
Oh, I'd buy 10 of those.
They may well. And when you go to the Maxis offices, it's now all EA. The place is covered in these little things. Like the printer is actually right there.
That
so
is awesome.
So it's covered in all these little creatures.
They are, it must be said, though, that the thing we're looking at here that they're talking about charging $20 for potentially is about an inch and a half tall. I'd still probably buy one.
As far as the creatures looking cute, though, I think that might be actually related to the technology, because there's actually a program much like the sculpting sub-program of Spore, where you actually sculpt 3D models with your mouse, and it's very, very easy, much like it is in Spore. And the program is called Teddy, because everything that you make looks like a little stuffed animal, because it's all bulbous and it's just rounded, already these rounded corners.
Also, it's a stylistic thing,
Yeah, exactly.
I think the whole look of the world is very, it looks kind of like claymation almost.
Right.
Yes.
That's the best analog I can come with.
Plus, you have to keep in mind it'll all be textured procedurally too, so you're not going to get, the scars and the details that you would if an artist painted it by hand.
I was going to say the graphics in this demo are way beyond the last demo that I saw, which may have been GDC from 2 years ago. I don't know if I saw the E3 footage. But the
game was playable, actually, and not the game, but the editor, the creature editor, was playable at Leipzig last year. So.
But did the planets in the nebulas look as good as they do now? Because when he was zooming in on that planet, I mean, that was like seamless, and the clouds and everything, they look stunning.
I'm pretty sure the game's pretty close to done.
Yeah,
it's been looking pretty good for a long time. I don't recall. It was probably at E3. Well, actually, I did see it after E3. I actually took my dad. to Maxis, to the idea. It was a story that actually didn't end up, was a podcast that didn't end up panning out. But I took my dad to see one of the
ship editor, wasn't
ship,
it?
Yeah, the ship builder.
Vehicle.
And the idea was my dad, when he graduated college, was an engineer and he designed rockets. So the idea was, Spore, so easy, even a rocket scientist can play it. He's never in his life played a game. And so they handed over the tool set to him, had him design ships, and he got right into it. But anyway, that was a while ago, and it looked fantastic. The nebula has been in for a while. What's not in this movie, and what wasn't at E3, and what I don't think anybody has seen at all, is sort of the big middle game.
Right.
The demo.
Well, the game part of the game, right.
Yeah. Yeah. The demo always includes, like, here's your little, single-celled creature. And then, cut to, he's in space, and he's got spaceships.
We know there are five stages, and we've seen, he's shown the first
right.
two, but not the city-building one, which I think is the fourth one.
So what's the progression? What are the five stages?
The first one is you're the single-celled organism, then the second one is you gain intelligence, and the third one is the tribal one, where you control more than one creature, the fourth one being city-building, and then fifth is space.
So you literally begin as like an amoeba and you evolve.
But even that game has changed. I mean, originally it was supposed to be more of a Pac-Man type game, but now it looks a little more complicated.
Well, it still looks amoeba, kind of like a Pac-Man game.
Yeah, the amoeba level.
Yeah, I think it's still pretty similar to that, where you start off just eating, eating and try to avoid being eaten, essentially.
Going from a game that everybody's heard of, Spore, to one that we talked about earlier in the week that nobody had heard of, which is MapleStory, despite the fact that it's got these 50 million users, I actually got an email from a financial analyst by the name of Tony Kim, and he actually said some interesting things about the game and about the Asian market in general. I'm going to read a couple snippets of what he said. Okay, so he said the number that we quoted, the 50 million users, was a worldwide number, which I thought I made clear, but there might be some confusion there where he thought it was, I was just quoting, like a U.S. The 50 million That's 50 million download registered users in the world. And the reason why it could be true, DJ was skeptical that of the 50 million figure.
I believe my exact word was lies.
Right. So he says the reason that it could be true is that MapleStory is being licensed to a Chinese publisher called Shanda. Shanda is one of the largest MMO, the top three operators in China. It is important to note that Shanda has 23 million MMO active paying accounts and 14.5 million total accounts in fourth quarter of 06. Many of these accounts are for casual games. MapleStory is actually considered an advanced casual game or casual MMO. The business model behind casual games is microtransaction, in-game items that you pay for, based and not subscriptions. This is a big difference in the MMO market in China compared to, say, U.S. and Europe. Therefore, it is quite possible that MapleStory has probably 10 million quote-unquote users in China, but typically only maybe 10% of those users actually buy an in-game item. So while it's possible that MapleStory has 50 million worldwide accounts, of which I suspect at least a quarter of those are in China, the amount of money that MapleStory generates is far smaller than what the 50 million users might infer if you compared it to WoW. So, and I actually did get that. I kind of inferred that during my meeting at GDC. Like, they clearly need a lot more people playing in order to, you know, maintain the game. Because if you don't have to buy anything, there are going to be a lot of people that don't. He also points out in this same letter that while World of Warcraft has 8 million total users, Asia has most of those. There are only, quote-unquote, only 3 million users in the U.S. And people in Asia do not pay anywhere near the $15 that we pay. He says that they pay about, a lot of places in Asia pay about $2 a month for World of Warcraft. So, makes you feel kind of cheated, doesn't it, DJ?
No, because I don't have to live in China.
That's okay.
I get to post things on Yahoo without getting thrown in jail.
Because I'm driving my $50,000 car.
But I'm pretty sure they don't do diminished price there because they feel bad for you that you live in China. I'm pretty sure that's not how the business model works. The fact that they're able to sustain, you know, obviously a very healthy game at 2. Whatever, what did they say? I think it was $2.10 a month. It's a little surprising that there would be that big a delta. $2 there and $15 here. I think we end up supporting, you know, we probably end up supporting their growth into Asia.
Probably.
So, just sort of fascinating, I thought. He supplied some other info about big MMOs in Asia. And it's a bunch of things you've just never even heard of. Like a game called Detang that has 400,000 users, Westward Journey, 500,000 users. Fantasy Westward Journey has 1 million users. And these are all games, obviously, that nobody's even heard of in the U.S., but they're enormous. The Asian market is ginormous for MMOs.
Greg, can you post that letter on our blog so listeners?
Probably. I would have to ask him before I actually listed everything.
Okay.
But I'll shoot him an email and see what he says. And what were you going to say, Chris?
What I was going to say is I wonder how many people are playing. I mean, there must be quite a few who are playing multiple MMOs at once.
They probably do.
And there's got to be some crossover.
There's got to be over there. Considering that there's no, you know, the games aren't built to be like WoW, they probably don't involve the ridiculous time sinks that WoW does.
Is it basically just like you're jumping in to play a casual game, except that it's an MMO? I mean, I'm assuming it has to be.
Must be. And it's interesting that it's classified there, that MapleStory is classified as an advanced casual game. Whatever that means, but you can sort
that's
of...
an interesting...
I classify it as boring.
Says the guy who's never even installed it or seen a screenshot.
And you
I've
love
seen
drinking
screenshots.
The Haterade.
Yeah.
I've seen screenshots. Looks boring.
It's boring.
You're boring.
I hate it.
Well, moving on from that, because I know that story always puts DJ to sleep, although I'm constantly fascinated by what other countries are playing. Gold live pricing, which we talked about earlier in the week, at the time, we thought it was actually, it had been announced, but it wasn't. Yeah, it was actually last week, or earlier in the week, rather, it was speculation. But the pricing now has been made official. Microsoft has written up a press release. And, Norm, you can talk more about the specifics, but I know it's $50 a year. And if you've got Gold on Xbox 360, then you're already set for Live on the PC.
Right, so Live from Windows, the big difference is that, you know, they will still have Silver and Gold versions, but with the Silver version, PC gamers will still be able to play against other PC gamers. Like, multiplayer will still be there. So what you're paying for with the Gold membership, and this is only for people who don't already have a 360, is that support for cross-platform gaming for games like Shadowrun.
And also, you get multiplayer achievements.
Multiplayer achievements, right. And I think achievements can be a big thing for Live from Windows, because I know I'm addicted to achievements right now on 360, and I can't wait to get addicted.
Do you want to explain one of the things? I actually had a chance to talk to JJ, his last name escapes me now, from Microsoft about this when they announced it yesterday or the day before. And the number that they had for the crossover of people mm-hmm. who are playing on both platforms was 70%.
Really?
Yeah.
70%
or like
67%.
Well, our dual platform gamers. I'm assuming 360.
That's pretty reasonable, I think, because most people on 360 have a PC, and that probably includes casual games like.
I bet what the number is the people that are on Xbox Live,
who are gold members, because there's 6 million total. Live gamers includes both silver and gold members right now.
And that also includes both Xbox One and Xbox 360.
Exactly, right. So that's probably just number of gold members they have, which they assume have PCs, or they've surveyed that have PCs.
People over Xbox Live. So
I wonder how many people already have a gold membership. Like, I wonder how many people are actually going to have to purchase
one that
already have it.
The only thing that really bugs me about this is that, and I guess it's a little, this point was kind of vague, but it sounded like that voice chat in games was not something you get with silver for free. Like, you've got to actually get gold for that. So even though you might not care, like, you're a PC gamer that doesn't have, a 360, doesn't care about the 360, and so you don't have Live, you're kind of still going to have to pay if you want to have voice chat, supported voice chat. I'm wondering how that's going to go over.
Well, supported voice chat through the Live system. You can still run Ventrilo or Roger Wilco in the background and TeamSpeak, right. But if you want to have a convenient system, because not everyone has those programs. So I've played a ton of games where, you join a Battlefield game and they have their TeamSpeak server up. But if you don't have TeamSpeak or you're a Ventrilo guy, you're out of luck.
What about hypothetically, if Live, imagine, so instead of being obviously hosted over something like, whatever it would be, GameSpy, it's hosted over Live. I mean, do we see a situation where Live would prevent somebody? Is it possible to prevent somebody from using TeamSpeak?
If Microsoft's goal is
to make you pay for Live?
No, it doesn't. It's not possible.
That'd be really foolish for them to do that. I think they have enough benefits in that system where it's so integrated in there. So if you have the headset and you jump in a game, you're guaranteed to be able to play, hear everyone. And it works really well, and I think it's enough for them.
The thing about headsets, though, is that it works really well with Xbox because it ships with the Xbox and it's very easy to use. But with the PC, we have trouble every week sometimes with somebody's headset not having the right volume or something.
Company out there wants to demonstrate how great their headsets are and send them on over, we should be willing to try them.
I was wondering if Vista had some sort of added functionality for that. Do you guys know if Vista has any kind of headset...
I haven't actually plugged in a headset to my Vista machine yet, because I was using my webcam for that,
for
that before.
Right.
Though I actually did finally find a headset at home. So
I was going to say, Jeremy, that I've actually had my experience on Xbox 360 Live has been anything but great as far as voice chat is concerned. Like, it seems like I'm often having to jump out and jump back in to get clarity.
Really?
Could just be my internet connection.
No, I don't think so. I think a ton of people are having that same problem, and it's just because they have to. It's international also, so they have to accommodate for all the different protocols for voice chat. But it's really cool because they have a wireless headset, and the wireless headset plugs into the controller, and that can wirelessly go into your computer, and your computer recognizes it as a microphone, so you can use that.
What if you're not using a game that uses a gamepad?
It's built into Vista. If you plug a gamepad into Vista right now, it recognizes it as a sound device.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Microphone in the sound in the gamepad already?
No, there's the support for that.
Oh, okay.
So, Greg, is that confirmed that you won't be able to do voice chat PC to PC?
I don't think that is confirmed. Okay. I think that's just sort of the way that it was worded. That's what people are speculating.
Yeah. The press release says that you will be able to have, in the silver package, which is free, you'll be able to do private voice and text chat. So the speculation is that that will not allow you to jump into a game
right.
and talk to everybody at once. You might be able to talk to one person at a time.
And, you know, I mean, you can sort of understand it. I mean, they have to try to have parity between Xbox Live and games for Windows Live. I think there is definitely going to be a vocal minority, how large that minority is, that, you know, basically would only be paying for gold because of this voice chat option and will be really upset that they're having to do it for that. Because
although, you know, you wouldn't hear them because they wouldn't be on live.
Yeah, you know, but we'd certainly hear their emails. I mean, I think, you know, the fact that you could do Ventrilo or some other system is cool, but if no one's using it, it's going to be hard for you to convince your buddies that all have live to, like, hey guys, let's use TeamSpeak
right.
instead.
I mean, a lot of games these days are building in their own VoIP support.
True.
I mean, I know Counter-Strike has it, Battlefield has it, Second Life is adding it. Yeah, I know.
Shadowrun will have it.
Shadowrun has it through live.
Right.
The thing is, I don't see people using it all the time. It's not very widely used. And I
no,
think
well,
a unified system.
It's always nice to have a standard, but but these are all things that you don't pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's built into the game, so it does have the integration that these games would have over live. So I mean, like in Second Life, I was at GDC and saw this demo of the technology they're using. It's a company called Vivox that does it. They're being integrated also into EVE Online and a couple of other games, where they're able to do things like if you get close to somebody, you can start hearing them. Like if they get within earshot. Or if they're on your right, you'll hear them through the right speaker or right headphone, and you know, vice versa, or you know, left side, blah blah blah. You know, so it's a bunch of neat little things like that are integrated with the game already. So you know, I'm not seeing that compelling a reason to go with live, you know, live gold voice chat.
Are you guys excited about achievements coming to Vista? Because I'm an Xbox player who really doesn't get that.
I mean, was going to say, Norm, you were saying that you're really into achievements.
I am
and I
really
was thinking
into
it might be a good opportunity for you to explain
your craziness.
Why.
Your sickness.
We have gotten letters from people that like that. And we do have, there are lots of games that have basically achievements in them already. I mean, Company of Heroes, for example, has, you know, bonus side missions. CNC3 has them.
Do you want to explain?
But this isn't bonus side missions. These are just points that get you nothing except bragging
rights.
No, exactly.
Well, no, that's the gamer score, not
achievements. That's basically
we're talking about the
translates
score.
Into. Right. Okay.
More
gamer score idea, which could adopt, you know, take these bonus missions. Like, if you know, you play through a game once, and if you don't do the bonus missions, there's really no incentive for you to go back and play it again. But if there's a numerical value attached to that, and if that number is forever attached to your gamer profile, then you have more incentive to go back and try to, you know, finish those bonus missions.
And that you are shamed into doing it?
But yeah, like, what is the, like, what's the motivation?
The motivation, I mean, it's totally about bragging rights, and it's just,
okay.
I mean, you're right, but it's strangely addictive.
I am a bigger nerd.
I mean, obviously
you.
There's
yeah.
something to it, because lots of people are,
lots of
are into it.
Well,
yeah.
On Xbox Live, I've got something like, I don't know, 1,500 to 2,000 achievement points. And I don't care, I don't follow it, but I do know that when I'm playing a game and I unlock something or I do something that awards me, say, 10 achievement points, I do kind of feel satisfied for
that,
no good
that
reason.
That sound effect, it's
yeah.
forever connected to your brain.
That's
but
great, but yeah, but some people actually play the game again in order to get more achievements.
More achievement points.
Yep.
Well, I think there's a rumor, I think it's just a rumor, that Microsoft was going to start doing something to actually give you something for achievement points, like you could actually trade them in for swag or something in-game, I don't know.
How it is they haven't done that yet, I don't completely understand. But
I think that was...
I guess they haven't had to. I guess why would you? Everybody seems to be into them anyway.
I think part of this rumor that I heard was that was maybe always part of the plan.
Okay.
That it was just something that they had to figure out how to implement. Because I think, you know, if you were actually going to award something that had monetary value... then you start getting into issues like, well, so are people going to be cheating? You know, if somebody recently made a machine for a specific game that allows you to get, like, all the achievement points for that game, like, are people going to be cheating their way to get this stuff? And then,
yeah, there's achievement fraud all the time. And some people have even bought various, like, different versions of games, like a European version and a U.S. version, because it gives you two different sets of achievement
really?
Points.
Huh.
Yeah,
just to get double the score. But I think
it's
giving,
like the new gamer crack.
Yeah.
I think giving people Microsoft points to buy, like, a live arcade game with achievement points. That could be something.
Yeah,
really cool.
I just don't understand why they haven't done that yet, to be honest. But
the one thing I will say, I don't like achievements. I don't get into that, but I do like the scorecard where you actually can have your friends list and it tells you which of your friends has the highest score in a particular game. So, like, you know, Geometry Wars or something, I can actually try to beat Greg's score, and that's that's fun. It's like the old high score in the arcade.
And those are bragging rights you actually care about.
Right.
Beating Greg.
Exactly.
Yeah, beating me. Well, because, you know, it's your buddies, you can give each other but, like, what do I care if my gamer score is higher or lower than some kid who lives across the street?
I will say this. There's only one there's only one gold account in my, you know, in my house on R360 right now, and because Vlad likes to play Gears of War Online, I put it on his account. There's like an argument going on in our house because I wouldn't be able to log in with my gamer tag, but it means I'm not getting, you know, like we're always playing on his with his gamer tag, so he's the one who's racking up all the points. It's beginning to really piss me off. Just so you know. So if you're listening out there, sweetheart.
Vlad, wherever you are. Here's an interesting story. Commodore is getting back into the business. They're releasing new PCs.
Yeah, high-end gaming PCs.
Yeah, like, did anybody get more details on this? It just seems odd. Is this sort of like where somebody, like, bought the Atari name and brought that back, but it wasn't actually the original group? Because, I mean, Commodore has always been really big in Europe. There were Commodore magazines in Europe years after the company went away. People were still crazy about those systems. But here in the U.S., I don't think anybody who's not 30 years old is going to recognize that brand.
They're cool cases because they're custom painted.
Yeah, they are.
And they're pretty beefy systems, but it's pure. It's a name thing.
I haven't seen
there's
the picture.
Unique about it.
Is that on our Delicious page?
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't they look? To me, it looked like they were cool painted like Cooler Master cases. Is there something else there that I'm missing?
I don't think so.
No.
Well, we'll await further details, but yeah, the interesting bit is just that the Commodore name is back. I can't wait to put a tape into it and play my first tape game in 25 years. So,
yeah, you guys know I'm a big fan of the demo scene, and the Commodore is still a huge, huge platform there. It's still totally vibrant.
Really?
They're still making new programs, new demos for that, breaking new ground with technology every month, every year.
And because it's so hard to do because of the small memory footprint, yes?
Yeah, and they know the hardware so well. You know?
That's still
that
interesting.
Pleases me.
You're still in the demo scene.
Yeah, big time. I went to, we actually, if I could plug a DVD that we just released the Amiga Archive DVD called Mind Candy, Volume 2 at mindcandydvd.com. So if you're into the Amiga demo scene, that's the disc to have.
All right, well, talking about, like, you know, gamer scores, like, and crap like that, like, what what is the appeal here? You don't program, you don't make these things. What is your interest in this scene?
Jerk.
Yikes.
Just curious.
Well, I guess it's connected to games because, you know, I grew up with computer games and I like computer graphics and I like to see them pushed to new boundaries. So that's part of it. But I think there's something to making a computer graphic demo that's non-commercial that you just do for the love of the technology and the love of the creativity and the art. So that's
it really is. Like, it's coding as art because the finesse that goes into it is just incredible.
And I get that. But as somebody who's not a programmer who doesn't understand why, say, like, you know, making a program with that's like only 16K is amazing.
Right. Well, I think if I didn't grow up with computers, I wouldn't have that appreciation. And that's why I think most people who aren't into computers don't get the demo scene at all. Right. But having grown up with that since I was, you know, in the 70s, I sort of have this innate appreciation and understanding for what's possible. And when I see something that's done that I didn't think was possible, I can appreciate that.
Interesting.
But getting back to the Commodore game system, if you go to CommodoreGaming.com, they have a they have a shot of one of their cases here that's all decked out with SUPCOM. It could be better art. I mean, it looks like they use just the stock picture that pretty much what came off of our announcement cover, except a little bit different.
But I think the concept is that it'll be. The faceplates will be swappable.
So
you could buy a bare bone system, right, and then you could swap it later with different artwork.
Supreme Commander on Commodore, now only 287 tapes. There was something at GDC that we didn't talk about earlier in the week that a couple of the guys here saw and were fascinated by was the Fable 2 demo, and then more specifically the dog, the pet dog that was on display in that demo.
It pretty much was the demo, really. It was a demo talk given by Peter Molyneux, who is the creator of all the old Bullfrog games like Syndicate and
he's the game
Populous
god.
And more recently Black and White and Fable, and the movies, and he was talking about this new dog that he's got in this game in Fable 2, and traditional Peter Molyneux style, he kind of oversold it, except he then went back and kind of made fun of that.
This presentation, the big focus of it was innovations in game design, and what they wanted to do with Fable 2 is to really create this emotional connection between the player and the in-game characters. And a lot of games have fantastic moments, but you never really care about the NPCs. So with Fable 2, you'll have family and this dog, which he hopes, if you walk away from this gaming experience feeling genuine love for the dog and feeling loved by the dog, then when he inevitably, when he kills the dog off in the game, that will be a great gaming moment.
Well, or just, you'll have some attachment to the dog. They didn't say they were going to kill the dog in the game.
Oh, he did.
Can you teach the
buy
dog?
Buy this game or we kill this dog.
Yeah.
No, I read a really interesting blog entry where the blogger was saying that, if he succeeds, then there could be a point where he wouldn't even want to continue playing the game because he knew that the death was coming.
Dog was going to, right.
Yeah.
But the dog simulation in there was really impressive. The animations alone, he described it as, the culmination of everything they've learned about creature AI from Black and White, and every game they've done before, they didn't say that it would it didn't overpromise like he did with the Black and White AI, where it would, learn and da 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 da. But it is trainable in some ways. The dog is supposed to serve a purpose in the game. For example, it will run out ahead of you and scout for enemies, and bark at them if it sees them. It will help you in combat. Like if you are using a ranged weapon, it'll attack a guy with a melee weapon to keep him away from you. Or if you're using a melee weapon, he'll attack the guy with a ranged weapon to keep him away from you. Things like that. So he's always there helping out. And of course, you can always just ditch him if you want.
But then he'll come back for you because, like the three laws of robotics, this dog also has three laws that are built into him, and its number one law is that it must love you.
Yeah. I thought the number one law is that it shouldn't annoy you.
Oh, right.
That the number two law is that it loves you, and the number three law is self-preservation because they had a bunch of situations in testing where they would come into the testing room and the testers would be throwing the dog's ball off a cliff, and the dog would throw itself off the cliff to its death, chasing after the ball.
It's kind of creepy. It's almost like that movie AI where the child has undying love for his mother. Yeah, could be creepy.
Yeah, except probably with a better ending.
Shut up, I love that movie.
You like the ending of AI?
I don't like the ending of AI. Anyway.
Ben Kingsley, Alien. Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. This is John Shepherd here on the west coast of Canada. Just calling to say hi and wanted to ask where Greg Veerman is and Kristen Salvatore. I haven't seen you guys in a couple of shows, so wanted to know. Anyways, on to my question. I just wanted to know if you guys thought it was worth getting a DX10 card over a DX9 right now. I was thinking about going for the 8600 when it comes out, because I've heard about it, and it's supposed to come out in April, and it's going to be really cheap. But I don't really know if it's worth it because DX10 cards don't really work that well with DX9 games, and there aren't really any DX10 games out unless Supreme Commander was one of them, which I don't think it was.
I can't remember. Anyways, so just wanted to know what you guys thought. DX9 card or DX10? Thanks very much. Keep up the good work. Bye.
First of all, Greg and Kristen, where have you been?
Yeah, where have we been all your lives? I'm sorry about that, guys, but we've been here twice this week, and I think the show has been even suckier as a result.
We had a really busy magazine production cycle. This past issue was a real bear, so we've been working.
Making magazines.
We've been making words.
To answer his question, I think he's wrong about the first point, but right about the second point. His first point being DX10 cards don't work well with DX9 games.
They work fine with DX9
games. They work fine. I think the thing is driver problems. Yep, right. Driver
compatibility. Well, and that's only with Vista.
That's right. So if you're running
a Vista
system...
Well, but so is DirectX 10, moron.
That's right. But DirectX 10 doesn't actually really exist yet. There are no DX10 games.
So which was his second point? So you're right. There aren't that many DX10 games right now, but a lot of DX9 games will be. There aren't any, but they will be supported in the future with patches, and there are going to be a bunch coming out in the second half of this year. If he said, get a DX9 card now or a DX10 card now. If those are your only two options, then get a DX10 card now.
Yeah.
Otherwise, hold off and wait a little bit.
Well, he was thinking of waiting the 8600, which is the unannounced NVIDIA card, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's announced.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. But, what's it going to retail for? Like under 200, right?
The bang for buck quotient for that is really high.
Well, I mean, the major consideration here is, do you have Vista? Because if you don't have Vista and you're not planning to get Vista, then you're not going to get DX10 anyway.
Well, everyone's planning to get Vista, just we don't know when.
Not everyone's planning to get Vista.
You think?
Well, whether you plan to or not,
if they're getting
if you're a PC gamer, you're going to get Vista at some point in the next year or two.
Not necessarily. I mean, all the games that come out that have DX10 are going to be backward compatible with DX9, and there's no... If people don't spend the big bucks to get the top-quality graphics cards or a new graphics card, if they're not ready to upgrade yet, they're not going to run out and buy Vista.
Yes, but they should be thinking about Vista in the next year to 2 years, because there will be more and more, especially first-party games from Microsoft, that will only work in Vista. So if you don't care about that kind of thing, then yeah, you can stay in XP. But
like Halo 2.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a perfect example, right? Here's a three-year-old game that would clearly work in XP, but doesn't. It's only going to run in Vista. So if you want it, you've got to have Vista. And it's only DirectX 9. So, but yeah, I would, to DJ's point, I mean, obviously, if you know for sure you're not going to buy Vista for the next year, save some money, get a DirectX 9 card. But I don't know very few people that are actually in that situation where they honestly believe right now or know that they're not going to buy Vista in a year.
I know a lot of people that just have no interest in Vista because they don't feel it offers enough of a change.
Yes.
DJ hangs out with Mac users.
But even so, I mean, it's still, you can say right now I have no interest because there are no games that require it. That's fine, but you don't know when the games are going to come out that will. You don't know what the patches are going to be like. So to say I'm going to draw a line in the sand and say for the next 12 months I'm definitely not buying Vista seems like an awfully silly thing. Assuming you can of course afford it.
It's an added
definitely
expense.
The future.
It is an added expense to think about if you want to get a DX10 card, because you will not get any advantage out of a DX10 card and above any performance increases that over a current card that you have if you do not have Vista.
Right.
Even when the DX10 games come out.
Hey, PC Gamer, I'm a big fan of the show, and I just wanted to let you know, if you didn't already, that Rotten Tomatoes just released their list of the 100 worst-reviewed films of all time. And guess who has 3 films on the list, all in the bottom 50? I'll give you a hint. Number 33 is Blood Rain. House of the Dead comes in at a very respectable number 26. And Alone in the Dark comes in at a very appropriate number 2, second only to Ballistic X vs. Sever. I also wanted to say, in response to your question a few weeks ago, that I wish somebody would set an MMO in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. And it looks like THQ has granted my wish, so let's hope it's good. Anyway, I love the podcast, and keep up the great work. Uwe, if you're listening, you keep up the great work too, buddy.
Careful, he might punch you in the head.
Yeah, he holds a grudge, that guy. Just as a side note, my uncle actually wrote the music to Ballistic X vs. Sever. who he also did the Matrix trilogy though, so he does good stuff.
Who's your uncle?
Yeah. Don Davis.
Your uncle's Don Davis? Holy crap. I know the name. I have his album.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Well,
that's it for me.
Norm is a fan.
Oh boy.
Anyway, what was the rest of his question?
He didn't want to point out that Uwe has two movies.
Right, Uwe Boll sucks.
Well, yes, I guess we should talk about Postal 2, or the Postal movie, because a trailer.
There's a trailer out?
There's been a trailer out.
I don't even want to see it.
It looks pretty terrible.
Of course.
He claims that, you know, he sort of, I think, takes the same position that Eddie Murphy does, which is like that the industry is just, that critics are just unfair with him. That clearly people like his movies. They all make money. So what's everybody's problem?
Actually, this is kind of relevant because there was just an article in Variety about the current state of movie reviews and how comparing movies to video games video games are the new scapegoat for bad movies. Like that movie 300, which came out over the weekend, the biggest complaint for that movie was it looked too much like a video game. And, if you're in the case of Postal 2 or Postal the movie or Alone in the Dark, you know, the game or the movie is based on a video game. So.
But far, far worse than the game.
Yeah, but it's bad anyway.
Yeah.
Didn't he say something about the Warhammer MMO?
He just said that, that we were talking about it would be cool if they made one, and now one has been announced. So
THQ we hope it'll be cool. THQ just announced that they haven't said anything else about it other than it's coming. I spoke to their PR guy not too long ago, and he said when they had something to show on it, they'd show it. So we'll be sure to get it for you.
Hello. Have you heard about the optic lines? At least I think they're called optic lines in places like China. They're supposedly 300 times faster than things like DSL and just as cheap per month. Are we ever going to get these type of lines? Someone told me in the 90s that phone companies were going to put these in, but said it wasn't worth it at that time. With those kind of speeds, games would be absolutely wonderful online.
Yeah, so yes, we have heard of them. It's fiber optic line, and it actually does exist. There's parts of the country that have it right now. It's just that it's very expensive. It's typically run underground, so you've got to, you know, any place that hasn't already been developed, that is in the process of being developed, you've got to dig up, you know, and lay this cable down.
It's expensive for the phone company, not the consumer.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, but it ends up being expensive to you, probably.
The phone company would just charge you exorbitantly because it's really fast, and they can't.
I don't know. How fast are you talking about? Because I mean, bandwidth wise, it's a fatter pipe, but latency wise, I mean, on cable, you're already getting 50 milliseconds on a lot of good servers. I mean, it's not going to be that much of a difference.
Yeah. One thing to remember about bandwidth and like the speed of your connection is it's not the amount, like the speed at which you can download a file that matters in a game. It's how fast your computer can talk to the other computers on the network, how much delay there is between what you do and what they do, you know, being meshed together.
But that's totally true. And, I mean, most games right now, most shooters only use about 10-20K, you know, of upload-download bandwidth, you know, when you're playing. But in the future, when, you know, the pipe does get fatter, you get to have more data like physics data. And so MMOs can get more complicated.
Well, and also something to point out is that when you've got, I've actually got a buddy who's got one of these optical lines, and you can pull down. I mean, sure, it doesn't make a huge difference in games right now, but you can pull you know, content off the web in like, you know, seconds. And of course, you've got to be connected to somebody who's got a really fat pipe as well. But if you're like downloading from Microsoft, you know, you can get ridiculous download speeds.
Right, and all this is like in countries like Japan, where it's a much smaller land area, where they're generally a few years ahead of us in telecommunications technology.
Well,
anyway.
It's not just that; it's the bureaucracy of it all, and
there's that too.
You know, the telecom companies just don't want to change the infrastructure.
We actually have in our building here in South San Francisco. I've been told by our IT guys that we have an optical cable line right across the railroad tracks, which is about 150 yards from where I'm sitting right now, and we can't get them brought over here because it would cost some ridiculous sum, like, you know, more than the building cost us to actually bring the line over here, and basically everybody in this little business park we're in would have to agree to a contract for the phone company to be willing to even consider it. So it is coming. Whether or not it actually ends up coming before some extremely high-speed wireless connection ends up, you know, solving all of our bandwidth
mile,
issues.
Though.
Yeah. Time will tell, but it certainly does exist, and it is in places all around the country. Playlist. What's everybody playing? Deej?
Blackjack.
Yeah. Dan just got back from Vegas, and you're up, yeah?
Are you up?
Vegas, baby. I am. Second time. Well, career-wise, I think I'm getting close to even, but the last two times I've come back from Vegas, I came home victorious. But I've also been playing a little bit of Carol Vorderman's Sudoku, which...
making friends all over the place with your assessment of what's going on there. Yeah,
I haven't seen that email.
An email. So DJ wrote a blog. I think it was 2 days ago about how the cover of this game was misleading because it looks like there's a cute 20-year-old girl. and you're supposed to believe obviously that it's Carol Vorderman, and of course it turns out it is, but it's from 20 years ago.
or some really good Photoshop work. And, you know, she's all over the interface of the game. She's, like, you know, chewing on a pen and being all coy and staring at you as you're doing the puzzle. She's, you know, draped over the puzzle box and slinky dresses. And, you know, it's painfully obvious what they're trying to do with that. But then they also have these videos on there, the instructional videos where she gives you tips. And she looks nothing at all like that. It's just hilarious, I thought.
Yeah, she's 46 years old in real life, and she looks like, you know, she looks like a mom.
Yeah, she looks like a 46-year-old woman, which, you know, she's not an attractive 46-year-old woman, but she's old enough to be my mother, and that's not what's portrayed on the box. And it's weirding me out now when she's looking at me from that puzzle.
So awesome.
So we've already gotten our first email from somebody pointing out that Carol supposedly has an IQ of 158.
I mentioned in the blog post.
And that DJ clearly doesn't have an IQ nearly that high if he's, you know, unable to get over his petty concerns and respect her for the genius that she is.
I like I said in the blog post, she is clearly qualified to teach me about Sudoku. I just think it's funny that the presentation of this game is, you know, objectifying her.
It's misleading.
It's not like I want my money back because, you know, if I were to buy this game instead of have it sent to me, I would, you know, not be buying it because I wanted to look at the pretty girl on the box. I'd be buying it to play Sudoku. But I just thought it was funny that they went to such lengths to, you know, make her look sexy on the box. Also, I just installed Stalker, but then I went to Vegas and didn't have time to play it, so I'll probably be playing that tonight.
Chris?
Guild Wars. I just said that 2 days ago. I'm not playing it. But I think I may have mentioned this on a previous podcast that I was thinking about replaying Psychonauts for the third time.
Yeah,
really?
And I haven't had a chance to start it back up yet, but now that I have a little bit of time on my hands before we launch back into production, I think I'm finally going to sit down. I think the reason I haven't started is because I know once I do, it's going to just be like 4 or 5 uninterrupted days of playing Psychonauts, which is exactly what happened the first time I played it. I just stopped doing everything else, including my job. So
it's backwards compatible now on the Xbox.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Great.
All right, so I got to go. So can I go next?
Yes.
All right, I've been playing some Stalker and also CNC3 and liking it.
Why haven't you been playing SEPCOM? And
why
will no one here face me?
Because we're tired of losing.
We're too scared.
You're all cowards.
No, we just don't like losing. I'm not afraid to lose. I just don't enjoy losing, so I'm not playing with you anymore.
You are a coward.
I'm taking my ball, and I'm going home.
Apparently.
Hey, guys, is Stalker something to be excited about?
Yeah, I played a beta. Well, I'll just jump in real quick. I played a beta a month ago that I really enjoyed.
It was Russian at the time, wasn't it?
At the time it was in Russian, but the gameplay was really cool. It was still buggy, so obviously I can't speak to exactly what the final quality was, and yes, it was still in Russian, but there were some amazing things in it. We'll talk more about it once the review's out, once we've had a chance to play the final. But yeah, it's worth getting excited about. It's fun.
Cool.
And I've actually, like Kristen was saying, it's only been 2 days, so I'm still playing Shady McGrady's Rising Star. I'm also playing with some new guitar toys, because I just bought some new guitar stuff.
Play SUPCOM, damn you.
I'm working on a review.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah, well, whatever. That seems to be it for now.
What about me, man?
Sorry, I keep forgetting.
Damn it.
You don't talk enough during the podcast.
Jesus.
Sorry. Jeremy, what are you playing? God, buddy, I love you so much, and I'm so interested to hear what you've got to play this week.
I haven't really played anything.
Sweet. All right. Well, on that note, I just wanted to say that that our Showdown 500-man LAN event is coming back around this year. It's going to be held in San Jose. Again, but it's not at the place it was last year. It's now at the San Jose Convention Center. It's going to be held June 15th through the 17th. There will be contests. There will be lots of cool games on display. There's going to be an expo element as well as a LAN element. If you'd like further details, go to showdownlan.com. It's going to be a PC Gamer and Maximum PC sponsored event. Last year's was a lot of fun. Expecting even bigger and better things this year, so make sure you swing on by. If you'd like to send us any questions, either written or audio, be sure to drop us a line at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to subscribe to the mag, go to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe. Thanks for joining us the second time this week. On behalf of Dan Stapleton, Kristen Salvatore, Norm the Intern, and Jeremy Williams, I'm Greg Viederman. We'll talk to you soon.
Let's not talk about anything crotchless in this.
Okay.
Okay? Is that cool?
Whoa.
It is like BattleBots. Well, you know, he was on BattleBots a lot.
Yeah, yeah. He competes with his daughter.
That's right. They had the Kitty Puff Puff.
Yeah.
Which
the
was that
Kitty
one that...
Puff Puff.
That was the name of this robot that they created that would shoot... It would shoot, like, gauze out of the front, and they would wrap the other robots, and that's how they would beat them.
Really?
And so because of them, actually, rapping is now, like, prohibited in battle. Because of the Kitty Puff Puff.
You're kidding.
Nope. Listen, if you want any random Will Wright's facts, I'm your gal.
How?
I can tell you that when he was 6, he took apart his mother's sewing machine and put it back together.
I used to take apart my toys.
And when he was 4, he picked up a dog by its hind legs and drove it around like a wheelbarrow. That went on his permanent record.
Hold on, sorry guys, I gotta.
Where have you gone?
I just got a reminder on
Outlook
here
that you need to be podcasting.
No, moving on from a game.
Nonetheless, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Bring it
but
on.
Moving on from a game.
What?
One moment. Sorry. I just threw a foam apple at DJ's head, but it actually hit his face.
A foam apple?
It's surprising, too, because your forehead's so big. I mean, I had a big target. Sorry.
My God.
Anywho.
Can I start over?
No.
No, you can't start over.
Moron.
Do over.
Jerk.
Retard.
Mulligan.
He went into this...